Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Minnesota House of Representatives Transportation Finance and Policy Committee hearing for this February 8th, 2022. I'm State Representative Frank Hornstein, the chair. And this hearing is taking place in accordance with House Rule 10.01 and is being live streamed by the House Public Information Office. So members, we have a series of presentations today. We'll be taking periodic breaks for member questions, so please raise your hand. I'll call on you, or you can also text or email our committee administrator, John Howe, and he will make sure that you get in the queue. This time, I would like to call on our committee legislative assistant, Dan Dodge, to take the role.
Chair Hornstein?
Present.
Hornstein, present. Vice Chair Cagle?
Present.
Cagle, present. Representative Petersburg?
Present.
Petersburg, present. Representative Barr?
Here.
Barr, present. Representative Bernardi?
Present.
Bernardi, present. Representative Elkins?
Present.
Elkins, present. Representative Frederick?
Present.
Frederick, present. Representative Hausman?
Present.
Hausman, present. Representative Heinrich?
Heinrich, present.
Heinrich, present. Representative Kosnick?
Kosnick, present.
Kosnick, present. Representative Mason?
Mason, present.
Mason, present. Representative Murphy?
Murphy, present.
Murphy, present. Representative Nelson?
Nelson, present.
Nelson, present. Representative Olson?
Present.
Olson, present. Representative Richardson?
Present.
Richardson, present. Representative Torkelson?
Torkelson, present.
Torkelson, present. Representative West?
West, present.
West, present. There is a quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Dodge. Our next item of business is approval of our February 3rd minutes. Representative Petersburg, did you have a chance to take a look at those? I know I didn't give you a heads up quite like I usually do, but you've been great about this in the past. Have you had a chance to take a look at those, and do you have a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you, and I do move the approval of minutes as presented.
Representative Petersburg moves the minutes. Is there any discussion? This is one where we can do a voice vote. So if members could please unmute. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, the motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. So members, we're just gonna kick off. I just wanna make a couple of brief comments to kick off our hearing for today, which is informational. But I do believe that some of the ideas that our testifiers will be discussing today will could potentially wind up in legislation. So if members have some ideas around traffic safety coming out of this hearing, please get those down on paper, and I would certainly be interested in hearing your ideas and suggestions. So members, this is really the beginning of a week of activities in our committee really dedicated to the issue of safety. This is a urgent issue throughout the state of Minnesota. It has many different facets to it. We'll be hearing about the four E's today, education, emergency services, enforcement, and engineering. We are kind of dividing up our hearing to talk about those various issues. On Thursday, we're going to really hone in on pedestrian safety. I think there are issues around speeding in particular and distracted driving that come to the fore today. And then we'll hone in on the specific issue of pedestrians, which we've had a lot of issues with fatalities and injuries on that. So we'll be talking about that on Thursday. So I'm really pleased with the lineup we have today to talk about traffic safety in particular. And I will start off by calling on Mike Hansen, the director of the Office of Traffic Safety for DPS, who has a lot of expertise and many years of experience in this issue. And there's no better person just to kick us off here for the next few minutes to give us an overview. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Hansen. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Mike
Hansen, and I have the privilege of serving as the director for the Office of Traffic Safety at the Department of Public Safety. I would like to thank all of you for the opportunity to testify in front of you today and to answer your questions and to provide you with a little bit of a snapshot of the state of traffic safety in the state of Minnesota. The message that I have today is rather difficult because the state of traffic safety is we are in a very difficult and in some ways unprecedented territory when it comes to what we are seeing taking place on roads across Minnesota. But I'd also like to make it clear that while we have some really significant challenges in Minnesota, it's not a Minnesota problem. These are things that are taking place all across the country. As you can see with the slide that's on display right now, that's just a summary of some of the states who have seen similar or even greater increases in the number of fatality and serious injury crashes that they've experienced. But as you can also see, that Minnesota ranks well up in the list as far as the percentage increases that we've seen. While these numbers are still preliminary for 2021, I think it would be safe for me to say that we will finish in the top five when it comes to the increases that we've seen in the number of fatalities that we've seen surging on Minnesota roads. Next slide, please, Jordan. As we all think back to the beginning of the pandemic in early 2020, and when the stay-at-home orders went into effect and our lives and our society were so significantly disrupted, I think we all realize that vehicle miles traveled, or the measure that we use to determine how busy are our roads, they dropped significantly in 2020. And during several periods of time during 2020, our volumes were half of what they would have been during a normal time. Now, historically, every time we have seen those significant decreases in VMT, typically that's due to an economic issue, but in this case, it was due to the pandemic. But when we see those drops, we see a corresponding drop in the number of crashes, the number of serious injuries, and the number of fatalities. However, what we realized was in fact the opposite of that in many respects, which is unprecedented. It hadn't happened before. Jordan, you wanna bring the next one up, please? As a matter of fact, we did see overall crash numbers drop, and they dropped by a fairly significant portion. But what we didn't anticipate and what we quickly identified as an emerging trend was the unprecedented increase in the number of fatality crashes that were taking place on Minnesota roads. At a time when traffic volumes were half of what they were in the year before, we were seeing twice as many fatals taking place. And this caused us to really have to dig deep to take a look and try and determine what was happening and to quickly pivot and to identify some countermeasures that would in turn make Minnesota roadways safe again. Until 2019, Minnesota had the enviable position of consistently being one of the top two or three safest states in the nation when it came to traffic safety. We still haven't figured out how to get ahead of Massachusetts, but I'm confident that we will one day get there and take that number one ranking. But we have a lot of work to do because we've given up a lot of ground. As you can see, in 2020, our fatalities increased to just about 400. And in 2021, and this is a horrifying number that we haven't seen since 2007, just shy of 500 Minnesotans lost their lives on Minnesota roads. Next slide, Jordan. The biggest cause, and I know everybody on this committee is probably well aware of this, and it is speed, and backed up by lack of wearing seatbelts. If we go back to 2019, we saw that we had 75 speed attributed fatalities on Minnesota roads. In 2021, our preliminary numbers are more than double that. 116% increase in speed attributed fatalities in just 24 months. And this is at a time when our VMT is recovering to pre-pandemic levels and maybe even increasing from pre-pandemic levels. So what we saw was bad driving behaviors, dangerous driving behaviors, high risk driving behaviors that took root during the early days of the pandemic are carrying through today, and it's costing innocent Minnesotans their lives. Next one, Jordan. So everybody would like to know, what have we done? Well, we have worked very hard to try and reverse this trend. We've yet to find the suite of solutions that is going to completely reverse it, but I can share with you a bit of positive news. Over the past 2 weeks, we've been watching our year-to-date fatality report, and I'm pleased to report to you that for the first time in about 24 months, we are behind where we were at this point last year. And to put in a specific number on that, to date, we are 7 fatalities fewer in 2022 than we were in 2021. Now, what we did is we worked very hard to develop a speed and aggressive driving safety and enforcement project. This was initially kicked off with our partners at the Minnesota State Patrol, and our sole goal was to go out there and to prevent these needless tragedies from taking place. Please keep in mind that every one of these fatality crashes is preventable. None of them have to happen. And so we worked with the patrol in early 21, carrying into and through 21 and into 22, using dedicated resources that we freed up and were able to make available to the colonel to put to use on the roadways. In addition to that, we partner with over 300 law enforcement agencies across the state. This is tribal, city, and county law enforcement agencies that we've also provided additional flexibility and some additional freedom to spend our traffic safety dollars on that all-important traffic safety mission, focusing on speed and high-risk driving behaviors. And last, but certainly not least, and I'm a huge believer in engagement with the public and education. And we work very closely with our partners at the DPS Office of Communications to come up with a wide-ranging, all-encompassing outreach, education, and media plan to get the word out what was happening on Minnesota roads and why it was important for every Minnesotan to drive smart and make good decisions behind the wheel. So with that, Mr. Chair, that is a brief picture of where we are at today on Minnesota roads, and I would be more than happy to answer members' questions.
Thank you so much, Mr. Hansen, for that excellent presentation and for your work. I have a question from Representative Torkelson. Go ahead, Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Hansen, for your presentation. Is there any differences in type of road or region of the state that where we see a particularly heavier increase in these fatalities, besides speed, is it regional or related to any particular style of highway?
Excellent question, Mr. Hansen.
That is a great question, Mr. Chair and Representative Torkelson, members. You know, that's the scary part about what we're looking at. And I know the Colonel is going to touch on this a little bit in his presentation, but quite honestly, sir, it's everywhere. It's on our freeways, it's on our highways, it's on our county roads, it's on our city streets, and it's on our township roads. We are seeing, you know, these occur all over the system. Roughly 60%+ of the fatalities occur outside of the metro area. So Greater Minnesota is significantly impacted by these increases that we're seeing. But it quite honestly is everywhere. As I said, speed is a primary contributing factor. We've seen an uptick in unbelted fatalities as well. So that combination is deadly. High speed, lots of energy, no seatbelt, the outcome is not gonna be good. We've seen, you know, our impaired numbers are trending downward slightly, and that's good news. And the really good news is that we're seeing some benefit in the distracted driving arena as well.
Representative Torkelson, did you have a follow-up?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Hansen. That's is alarming. Any demographic correlations here? Is age of driver or sex or any of that?
Well, the basic breakdown is it's historic. Young unmarried males tend to be very overrepresented when we look at our fatality and our serious injury rates. So we're looking at those males aged 19 to 35. But what's alarming when we start to look at the speed attributed fatalities, we're seeing that demographic is actually growing. And we're looking at males into their 50s and even into their 60s who are now being overrepresented. So we have a much expanded male population that is in the speed attributed fatalities.
Thank you, Mr. Hansen, and you will stick around for our next panel. And thank you, Representative Torkelson, for those good questions. I'd now like to bring up folks from Towards Zero Deaths, TZD. It has been a very important collaboration among several state agencies, the goal and mission of which is very clear in their title. And so it is a collaboration that includes MnDOT, the Department of Health, and the Department of Public Safety. This is, of course, a health issue as well. And so I'd like to first call on one of the co-chairs of the Towards Zero Deaths Initiative, Mr. Brian Sorensen. He is the state traffic engineer at MnDOT. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Sorensen. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Brian Sorensen, state traffic engineer with MnDOT's Office of Traffic Engineering. And I'm going to share my screen. Okay, so I'm just going to give the committee just kind of a brief overview of TZD and what it is. And as you mentioned, I'm one of three co-chairs. The other two co-chairs are Mike Hansen, who we just heard from Department of Public Safety, and then Mark Kindy from the Minnesota Department of Health. And so the TZD program is a multidisciplinary program led in partnership, like I mentioned, between the three departments, transportation, health, and safety, public safety. The U of M Center for Transportation Studies also is a partner in the program leadership. And the vision of our program is pretty simple. It's to prevent fatalities and serious injuries on our roads across the state so that we can get to zero. And TZD began back in 2003. And the figure here on the right shows where we were at with fatalities at the time leading up to the inception of the program. And fatalities were increasing at that time. And Minnesota spent some time getting to know Sweden and what they were doing with a Towards Zero Death program there. And we ultimately modeled our program after what they do in Sweden. And our program now has served really as a model for other states across the nation. And this just shows, you know, what's happened since that point in 2003. You can see in the area in blue what's happened fatalities year to year since that point. And there's no question that Minnesota's TZD efforts have made a difference across the state. The cornerstone of TZD is really collaboration. And TZD brings together multiple disciplines and across jurisdictions. From social scientists and surgeons to engineers, epidemiologists, law enforcement, legislators, educators and emergency care professionals, judges to community groups and families, all working together to improve traffic safety across the state. So as I mentioned, TZD is almost 20 years old, and we are in the process of right now at reevaluating TZD. And through that process, we believe there's really two areas that we need to focus on in the coming years to make a difference with fatalities and serious injuries. And the first has to do with addressing our culture in Minnesota. And how do we, in essence, develop a true lasting transformation of traffic safety culture? So, you know, we've talked about speed already, and I know that'll be a topic of further discussion here this afternoon. We have cultural issues with safety, and so how do we address those? And we do have a history of success with traffic safety culture. You know, the way we treat drinking and driving as a culture has completely evolved over the decades. Wearing a seatbelt, you know, was not very common decades ago. Now it is part of our culture. And so as we look at TZD moving forward, how can we best influence that culture? How do we best influence, you know, the decisions that people make as they get in their cars every day? And looking at positive community norming. So in what way do we message? You know, how do those messages look? How do they resonate with people? Ultimately, where do the messages come from? You know, Mike already mentioned, you know, statewide efforts, and we need to, you know, continue to improve in the way that we help make people aware statewide of traffic safety issues and how to address them. But we also need to be doing that at a more local level. You know, those messages need to be heard by people from others around them that they trust and know and they care about. And so this will be a point of focus for TZD in the coming years. And the other point of focus is how we develop a safe system, transportation system in Minnesota. So this is more along the lines of acknowledging that people are going to make mistakes. People die or their lives are changed every day across the country, doing things that thousands of others do as well. And so, you know, I think we need to acknowledge that as much as we will put in effort to try to help people make better decisions, people are going to continue to make mistakes. So how do we set up the system in a way where when those mistakes are made, that they don't pay for them with a life-changing crash? And so these are the two areas we put them together that we really see TZD focusing on in the coming years to make a difference in this arena. And with that, I will pause and hand it over back to you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much. And I see your hand, Representative Petersburg. We're just going to get through very quickly a short presentation from Mr. Kindy from the Department of Health. And then if there's any other final comments that Mr. Hansen wants to make, and then we'll get to your question, Representative Petersburg, probably in about 5 minutes or so. Mr. Kindy, please state your name for the record and welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, thank you so much. My name is Mark Kindy. I work with the Minnesota Department of Health and lead their injury and violence prevention program. I think really I'll save minutes. Brian captured this in essence. And from what Mike shared earlier, this issue, one of the primary E's of concern is this issue of energy. Energy unrestrained results in cellular damage, cellular compromise. And Dr. McGonigal will talk about that later on in the emergency medical services component. When our commissioner talks with us about the kind of this whole health perspective, she reminds us that health is, it's not just physical, not just my cells functioning, but it's the social, emotional, spiritual, mental components. And all of those pieces together are what create good health. We compromise that, we sustain really an assault through the pandemic. We are contact with each other, part of that social contract that comes when we're in touch with each other, not just on screen. We believe contributed, as we're studying the data, to part of what happened. And so reclaiming that, as Brian said, reclaiming the culture, creating a culture, the air that we breathe and the water that we drink, as it were, that contributes to how our honor and respect and care for each other is translated onto the roadway. And so it ends up affecting certainly the vehicle-to-vehicle crash, but as we'll hear later in the week, the vehicle-to-pedestrian, the vehicle-to-bicyclist, vehicle-to-motorcyclist. And we're just thrilled to be a part. The health department is passionate about this partnership with transportation and public safety. Thanks, Mr. Chair, and I'll yield to Mike Hansen.
Yeah, thank you so much, and we really appreciate your work, and that nexus between health and transportation is critically important, and we don't, I think, address it enough in many facets. So thank you for your work. And then, Mr. Hansen, again, any final thoughts you have before we open it up for a couple of questions? I have Representative Petersburg and Bernardi waiting in the wings here. So final thoughts, Mr. Hansen.
Mr. Chair, I think my partners have really done a great job summing it all up. TZD really is a holistic approach to solving some of these tough traffic safety issues. And we're privileged to work with each other and to carry this project forward. So with that, sir, I'll yield back.
And again, just members, just so you know, Mr. Sorensen, Kindy, and Hansen are all three co-chairs of Towards Zero Deaths. So we wanted to have all three of them on here for their perspective. So a couple of brief questions, and then we have many other speakers lined up. So Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And one of the things that I've always been concerned about is I agree with everything that has been said up to this point. We need to do what we can to reduce injury. And a lot of times it boils down to people just taking for granted that they're inside this encapsulated building or this vehicle and don't really consider what happens outside. And individuals really don't understand that when they get behind the wheel, they're getting behind a wheel that is a dangerous weapon. And major accidents are violence using a dangerous weapon. And yet we kind of hear, well, people are going to make mistakes. And so, you know, that's okay. And I know that's not the intended way to do it. But whenever we assume that people are going to be okay, if we make mistakes, I think that's a dangerous issue. So what we've been doing up to this point, because it's the easiest, is helping people to be successful in recovering or not being injured in accidents, and not necessarily about how to avoid those accidents. So I'm glad to hear that we're doing more with prevention and so forth. But I would just comment when we start thinking about driver error, and speeding is driver error. If you look at a pilot and a pilot's license, when he makes an error, it is almost always life-threatening. And so there are much fewer pilot errors and stuff in that regard. And I think we need to be very careful about not just arbitrarily saying, well, people are going to make accidents, and so what can we do? I think we have to really spend a lot more time in developing people's awareness of their responsibility and accountability for when they get behind the wheel. And so I guess I don't have as much as a question other than saying, please, I think we need to keep moving forward in that direction, because people's awareness is, for me, much more critical. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg, for sharing those thoughts. And I think the themes that you just mentioned will be coming up shortly in our next series of presenters. Representative Bernardi, and then Representative Mason, and then we were going to really have to move on to our next set of speakers.
Thank you.
Representative Bernardi.
And Mr. Chair, I could wait until the end if you'd prefer briefly just...
It's up to you, Representative Bernardi. If you had a question for either of these, any of these panelists now, it's appropriate. If you want to talk at the end, that's fine.
Okay, too. I may talk at the end too, but I would just say it's more of a comment that I really am looking to their leadership to, when we get this new federal money, to make sure when you talk about culture, it's not only the culture of how people behave on the roadways, but it's also cultural and how we build our roadways and how we spend our dollars. And so, you know, the old system was move cars fast and build a lot of concrete and stuff. So I need to look to the three of you to make sure that we're using all of our dollars that comes into the state to help keep people safe and not to move cars faster, and be able to use as many of these federal dollars to help create safety on our roadways. And that takes leadership, because it's not the norm. And I know things are transforming. And so I'm just really asking you to do all you can to get as much federal dollars as we can get in to work on safety for our most vulnerable users and on our roadways. And that the dollars that we do spend, they are being spent to create safety and not hinder that. Thank you.
Well, Representative Bernardi, I'm so glad you spoke up, because you reminded me that to mention and just reinforce what you said, that safety is one of the cornerstones of the bipartisan Federal Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. And so we will be looking towards applying federal dollars towards safety projects. And I know that our panelists and others that are on this call are looking very keenly at the kinds of projects that would enhance that. So that is really part and parcel of what we need to do.
And I just want to say, I do serve on two Towards Zero Death community groups. And one, we do meet monthly. The other one hasn't been meeting for a while. So I'm just going to put a plug in. If there's a way we can get that one going again in Anoka County, I'd really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks. And then let's, our final question from a member is from Representative Mason.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein. First of all, obviously, these people have their work cut out for them. And it's not just on the highways that we're seeing all this irresponsible and deathly behavior. So hopefully you'll make some impact on the other things as well. But I do remember about a year ago when we went to the construction zone around Maple Grove, and we were told that there were cars going through the construction zone at 100 miles per hour. Now that to me, you know, if they had hit anybody, that's not an accident. That is plain murder, because again, it's such bad behavior. So all I can do is wish you luck, and we certainly need as much help as we can get, because it's impacting behaviors in other methods as well, whether it's conversation or whatever it is. It's awful right now.
Well, and Representative Mason, thank you for that comment, because we are going to be spending some time in committee on work zone safety. You know, this has been a bill that's come before us in the past. I think there have been some developments on that issue over the last year or so. So we'll be working very specifically on the issue that you raised. So with that, members, I'd like to, and thank you to all of you. I know we'll be hearing from Mr. Sorensen again later, and I appreciate all of your work, and thank you again for this unique and helpful collaboration. And I already see Colonel Langer. So welcome to the committee, Colonel Langer. Please state your name for the record. And members, what we're doing is kind of going through each of these E's that we have discussed in terms of an approach and a strategy towards zero deaths and traffic safety. So we'll start with enforcement. Colonel Langer, welcome back to our committee, and please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members, good afternoon. It's my pleasure to be here. My name is Matt Langer, and I have the honor and privilege of serving as Chief of the Minnesota State Patrol. Also have the Chief of the Savage Police Department with us today to fill in any gaps from his perspective related to enforcement. And I will say this, I was brought up to not use the term accidents when we talk about fatal crashes. And law enforcement is often guilty about talking about these incidents in terms of accidents as well. But maybe one thing that we could consider is our collective use of the language and maybe pivot toward crashes, because as we know, there are reasons why these things happen and reasons that we hope to do our best to prevent. But if we start with the first slide that I have, just to show some data, because there's been a lot of really intense conversation about traffic stops, certainly in the past couple of years, for reasons that we completely understand and support. But at the same time, we have to understand the role that enforcement has as it relates to traffic safety. So this graph is rather telling. You can see on one hand, you see the green line shows the number of traffic charges issued, and that's the best data point that we can get from the courts. And then you see the purple line, of course, is the number of traffic fatalities. And you can see here, from my role as a passionate advocate of traffic law enforcement, that I think this graph is indicative that traffic enforcement does indeed relate to keeping our roads safe. It's not the only thing that we do to keep our roads safe. You've heard me testify in the past that we can't enforce our way out of every problem, nor can we educate our way out of every problem or engineer our way out of every problem. And we certainly can't save every life through the EMS system, though we try. But enforcement is a really critical component. And as we sit here in this moment right now, certainly through 2021 and into 2022, we see a very marked decrease in the amount of traffic enforcement occurring in our state for a variety of reasons. This is something that we're tracking closely. The State Patrol is doing everything we can, since it is our primary mission to do traffic enforcement, which is unique. Not any every other agency has the specific mission that we do. Nevertheless, this is concerning. The next slide is interesting because it shows the contributing factors to these traffic fatalities, these fatal crashes. And as Director Hansen spoke about earlier, you can see the blue line showing that in 2021, we had another year of an incredible increase in speed as a contributing factor. You can see that alcohol, a little bit steady, make some ups and downs. In terms of progress, the unrestrained fatalities are trending up. And then on the good news side of the coin here, we can see that distraction-related the distraction related factor as it relates to fatal crashes is going down. I know many members of this committee worked very hard on the hands-free law. I was privileged to be part of that. I think that's making a difference. I don't think that we've solved that problem. In fact, we've seen some regression, I think, in terms of driver behavior if we just look around. But at least we see that the distraction-related fatal crashes, as it's reported through the state system, appears to be trending down, and that's a good thing. But if we focus on the main problem right now, and that's the one thing I hear about all the time, it's the speeding. And so if we go to the very next slide, it shows in a pretty illustrative way that the state patrol troopers who are out there looking for these speeders every day with their county and city colleagues, you know, we're encountering a ton of people that are driving over 100 miles per hour. And so you can see a really significant increase, you know, threefold increase in just a short period of time. And this is just the number of state troopers who are finding and stopping and citing drivers traveling in excess of 100 miles an hour. I have categorized it like this, and perhaps the Savage Chief can back me up on this. I think a few years ago, everywhere I went, in family functions or in my role as a colonel, people would say, what are we going to do about these distracted drivers? Everyone's on a cell phone and they're driving crazy. And I think people were right at that time, and we did a lot to deal with that dangerous driving behavior. Last year and this year for sure, it's about speed. Everywhere I go, people are saying that the roads are like the Autobahn in Minnesota. I can't get to Duluth to get my kid back to college and drive the speed limit because I get ran off the road. And so for the reasons that Director Hansen indicated, we've tried to do everything we can to be nimble and to put dollars and work into the speeding problem. But we obviously have a lot of work left to do because it still is a significant issue on our roads, and it's leading to people being injured or killed either worse or more than we've seen in a long, long time. So that's a really quick snapshot from the enforcement perspective. I will say that I'm the biggest advocate of data-driven enforcement that I think you'll find. And so I think our time, certainly as an organization, the State Patrol, over the past 8 years or so, when I've been colonel, we've been focusing on the four things that the data tells us kills people in crashes. It's speed, it's seatbelt, it's distraction, and impairment. And right now, speed is the leading cause. And so if we look at that data, that's where we should be spending our time, and that's where we should be putting our focus. But I do invite Mr. Chair, if you'd like, the Chief Savage, yes, to provide his perspective as also a leader in this area.
Thank you so much, Colonel Langer. And Chief Sawyer, if you have some additional thoughts to share, we welcome you to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members, for the invite. I greatly, greatly appreciate it. My name is Rodney Sawyer. I'm the police chief with the City of Savage. I couldn't agree more with Colonel Langer's presentation. It's spot on. Some of the things that we have noticed in the suburbs and throughout the state is our DWI drug arrests have gone up. We also are seeing throughout the state that there are hospitals refusing to receive these patients requiring a blood draw, and that's due to staffing shortages, and they're concerned about staff being tied up in court. So, which leads us to now law enforcement is trying to train staff in becoming phlebotomists. And so that's another area that's put on law enforcement, that it's the only way we can, instead of waiting in a hospital for 2 to 3 hours to get a blood draw, now they're transitioning over to becoming a phlebotomist so we can get the blood draw sooner. Also, drug recognition experts throughout the state, the state does a phenomenal job in providing that type of training, but we need more drug recognition experts, especially if down the road in the years to come, they decide to legalize marijuana. So we're running into a shortage of DREs. Also, I've talked to my colleagues throughout the state, and they would like additional cameras throughout our main highways. And this would assist in investigation of crashes, traffic enforcement, and also the educational component. The continuation of TZD is the utmost, that's number one with us. It's the funding for traffic enforcement and community education. There's a lot of our departments throughout the state that go into the schools, in the high schools, when they're teaching driver's ed and talk about responsibilities. And like Representative Petersburg was talking about earlier, about you're getting into a vehicle that's a deadly weapon. And we've seen that in my department. We've seen where I've had three officers that were struck from behind, total the vehicles out, but my officers were able to come out of it okay. We have now, we're seeing that throughout the state also, when there's a major crash or there's a crash on a major highway, the fire departments are being called out now to bring the big rigs out to protect those who are investigating the crash, protect those paramedics that are out in the crash, protecting state patrol that are out in the crash. And so we're now relying on our public safety partners and work alongside of each and every one of them to make sure that the scene is safe, as well as safe for the drivers and those who are involved. So with that, I know you have a lot going on, and I just appreciate the time. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chief. Thank you, Colonel. I don't see questions. I do really especially appreciate, Colonel Langer, the graphic around the rise, and Mr. Hansen shared it too, but I think between the two of you really focusing on this issue of speeding, both the number of citations and the number of deaths, I do think this is an epidemic that we need to be dealing with in the state as well. And I hope that your comments and those of others that we'll hear from today can help direct us as a legislature in addressing that problem. So thank you so much for your work. We are now going to the second E, which is engineering. And I'd like to call up again Mr. Sorensen, our state traffic engineer. I already know ahead of time that we have at least one question for Mr. Sorensen from Representative Barr. But Mr. Sorensen, why don't you do your presentation, then we'll get to Representative Barr's question.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to note to the earlier point about the bipartisan infrastructure law, there are some pots of money that are directed specifically to safety. And we are, you know, currently reviewing how best to use those funds to make a difference in traffic safety. But it's also going to be important for us to look at those funding sources that are not specific to safety, to look at how we can incorporate safety into the projects that come through those channels as well. And so along those lines, I just want to highlight a few things that Minnesota has been doing to improve safety across the state on our roadway system. And I'll just move through these pretty quickly. But these are the types of things that, you know, I hope we can find a way to support with additional funds in the coming years. And so one that I think members are very familiar with, high tension cable median barriers, made a big difference in Minnesota since we made the decision to go that way in the later part of the decade, the 2000s. And you can see here just how the miles have increased over the years. We are certainly not done. We have a lot of work to do. Much of the freeways are covered by cable median guardrail, but you'll see, if you look on the south side of the state, I-90, we still have a lot of work on. These are important safety solutions along our expressways too, even though there's access. The crossover head-on crashes there could be addressed with this solution as well. So this has been an effective solution we have used and will continue to in the coming years. Roundabouts, everyone's familiar with. I think public acceptance of roundabouts has certainly evolved over the past 20 years. We've seen reduced severe crashes in the 80 to 90% range. You know, I made the earlier point about mistakes, and we certainly don't want to, you know, normalize the mistakes that are being made and say they're okay. But to a certain degree, there are things we can do to try to reduce the impact of those. And when mistakes are made at facilities like roundabouts, you know, changing the angle of collision, the speed that is involved, that can drastically reduce the ultimate impacts of crashes at these types of intersections. Reduced crossing intersections, you can see here You know, an example where you need to make, this is an expressway and you need to make the right turn and then a following U-turn in order to cross or to make a left turn onto the expressway. These aren't always embraced by the local communities where we are talking about these. They are maybe becoming a little bit more accepted, but we can't deny the safety benefits that these have provided over the years. And we've just updated our data and we're showing a 69% reduction in fatality and serious injury crashes at these intersections. And we've got over 50 of them now statewide. So our longitudinal lines in Minnesota typically over the years have been 4 inches wide. There are a number of studies across the country showing the fatal and serious injury reductions that come with adding width to these types of lines. And so in Minnesota, all edge lines placed on state roadways beginning this year will be at least 6 inch. And we're currently looking at other lines such as center lines and lane lines as well. Rumble strips has been an effective solution and studies have shown, and it depends on the facility. That's why you're gonna see a wide range in reduction, crash reduction there. But back in 2011 on the state level, we started to require them on all rural projects. Of course, you know, one of the main issues with rumble strips is the noise that they create for those that live and work around those facilities. And Minnesota has been a leader in developing designs that reduce that noise. And we have a newer design that can be used to reduce those noise impacts to surrounding properties. So a couple other kind of proactive systematic approaches I want to mention. We're currently trying about 30 intersections across the state with something called a constrictor. And in essence, what that would do is reduce the lane width as intersection on the main approaches the intersection. So where a typical width would be 12 feet, it's reduced to 10 feet, and then it comes with those wider edge lines and then also rumble strips. Some other things you might see across the system, red strips on stop signs, just to highlight the sign itself. Focusing especially on higher risk intersections that connect to our highways across the state. You may have seen yellow tape on back plates of signalized intersections, again, to highlight the signal and you know what the signal is indicating for traffic to do. Installed at 100 locations statewide in 2019. Other jurisdictions, cities and counties are also implementing these in different locations, and research is showing about a 15% reduction in crashes. We have delineator posts installed. You know, lighting we found has made some difference. Of course, we can't light the system all over. And so small delineator posts, you know, that reflect the headlight back to the driver can give an indication of the horizontal and vertical curvature of the roadway. And that's all I have, Mr. Chair, for just some examples of what we're doing on the engineering side to address traffic safety across the state.
Thanks, Mr. Sorensen. That was really informative and helpful. We have time for one question, and that question goes to Representative Barr. Oops, I see Representative Elkins. We'll have Representative Barr, Representative Elkins, and then we're going to need to move on. Representative Barr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Sorensen. I'm just going to make a quick comment, and then I'd really appreciate it if we could connect offline because I have a large number of concerns with the things that you brought up today. I drive a commercial vehicle for a living around the metro and the Midwest. I've done that for over 30 years. So I think I can at least tell you the things that don't work and some of the things that are tried and aren't working as well as could be. Your traffic circle picture was interesting, but that's not indicative of a single traffic circle I've seen in the state of Minnesota. Everyone that I've seen has the traffic actually turning to the left to get into the traffic circle to make a hard right turn and then go around the circle in a bunch of twists and turns as opposed to the picture you presented there. I'm particularly concerned with the engineering around the 35W project. You have entrance or freeway ramps on that. Anywhere there's a curve, the ramp is the pavement's actually 2 feet narrower in the curve than it is on the straightaway, which makes no sense to me. The County C, southbound County C exit and entrance ramps both are very poorly engineered. Vehicles exiting and entering the freeway off of that ramp do not physically fit in the lanes you have posted. And especially on the entrance ramp to 30 from County C to 35W South, that looks to me like it's about 8 feet wide of actual pavement. And that's a heavy industrial area. There's a lot of commercial traffic through there. So vehicles with a trailer coming around that corner to avoid hitting the guardrail that's there actually have to get into the travel lane almost 2 feet just to get on the freeway. That was just opened up this last year. That's a brand new project, and I'm failing to understand how something as common as the lane width could possibly be missed on that. So I really, those are just my comments, and I'd really like it if we could connect offline and go through some of this stuff more in detail.
Thank you, Representative Barr. I appreciate that. If you have any just brief responses just on the record here, Mr. Sorensen, if there's anything that you would like to respond to in terms of Representative Barr's comments, and obviously I would encourage both of you to connect offline, but Mr. Sorensen, any quick thoughts you have? Are you familiar with some of these details that Representative Barr referenced?
Yeah, I'm not familiar with the design at 35 and County C, but that's something we can certainly connect with Metro District on and review the process they use to come up with the design and whether any adjustments are needed.
Thank you, Mr. Sorensen. And thank you, Representative Barr. Representative Elkins.
Just real quick, the one measure that has proliferated widely over the last 15 years or so, more so on county roads and city streets, is the 4-lane to 3 road diet conversions. Minnesota local Road Research Board report on those, so that those also show dramatic reductions in traffic crashes and fatalities on roads that were previously 2 lanes in each direction.
Thank you, Representative Elkins. Do you have any comment on that, Mr. Sorensen? Maybe just a comment. So
yeah, absolutely. There's a number of benefits, and we could probably do a whole session just on that topic. But one of the main topics for today is speed, and those types of conversions do help with speed. And often, we're faced with questions about why can't we reduce the speed limit, when it's actually physical changes, like Representative Elkins is talking about, that actually do reduce speed.
Thank you for the question, Representative Elkins. And thank you again for all of your work, Mr. Sorensen. We look forward to staying in touch with you and a very informative presentation. So now we're gonna go to another E, education. And we have several folks that will be presenting. Again, we have Mr. Hansen, who has been sort of our all-star today. And then following him, we'll have Lisa Cones and Holly Kostrewski. So, if all of you can get ready, I'll call on Director Hansen first.
Thank you much, Mr. Chair. The superstars are going to follow me in this part of the presentation. I've worked with Lisa and Holly for many years, and they're the true experts here. What I'd like to do is just point out a few of the highlights from the Department of Public Safety as far as what we've embarked upon over the last couple of years. And I touched on a couple of points earlier, just to review, in early 2020, when we realized that there was this emerging threat, we initiated some new and some stronger messaging. We needed Minnesotans to pay attention. At that time, the pandemic was unknown. It was raging. It was taxing our medical system like it had never been taxed before. And we didn't need the unnecessary trauma in the emergency room. So that was kind of the core of our messaging then. I'm very privileged to work with a really skilled team of professionals at the DPS Office of Communications and all of our partner vendors who help us to develop the messaging and to develop how to deliver that message. Like Brian talked about earlier, not only is the message important, but how it's communicated and who communicates it is really important. And so we utilized a variety of different platforms, both earned media, which is when they come to us, and then the purchase media when we buy airtime on whatever that that platform happens to be. And we started that in 2020, and we continue to do that today. And that includes extensive social media campaigns. A lot of our demographics, that's where they get their news, is social media. And so we've got to get on there and we've got to be active, and that's what we put out there for them to digest. One of the really great parts of the Toward Zero Deaths program is the regional coordinators. We have 8 of them scattered across the state, 2 in the metro, and then 7 in greater Minnesota. And these are really one of those closely best kept secrets between DPS, MnDOT, the Department of Health. They are our eyes and our ears, and they really are involved in their local community efforts to keep the roads safe and to provide those educational materials. And they're backed up by our 4 law enforcement liaisons who work very closely with the agencies that we partner with, maintain those relationships, and help them with their messaging when it comes to traffic safety issues. We try and align as much as possible, and we've had great cooperation working with the Safety Council, working with AAA, to a certain extent, the Trucking Association, and some of the other NGOs that have a very significant vested interest in traffic safety issues. And then finally, we work very closely with all of our enforcement partners, from the State Patrol to the 300 plus other agencies across the state, helping them to develop, you know, their messaging, their outreach, to be consistent with all of ours. The more consistent the messaging is, the better it is for everybody. With that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to yield to my 2 partners for this presentation, Lisa and Holly.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your testimony. Our next testifier is Lisa Cones, and Ms. Cones is the Traffic Safety Program Manager for the Minnesota Safety Council. We really appreciate the work of the Safety Council. Welcome back to the committee, Ms. Cones. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Lisa Cons. I am the Traffic Safety Program Manager at the Minnesota Safety Council, and I also manage a grant under the Network of Employers for Traffic Safety. And thank you, committee members, for allowing me to testify today. My background is in education, and so what I'd like to share with you today is, as Director Hansen and many have alluded to, as we watched our fatality rate climb back in around October, we were close to 400 fatalities. Unlike distraction and impairment and belts and fatigue national campaigns, there's not a national campaign for speed. And so what we did is we put a pencil to the paper and developed a speed campaign. And we went grassroots and decided the Minnesota Safety Council partners and our member base is employers. And so we developed a campaign for employers to go home and share it with their employees and to hit that 5th E of our umbrella. And that's everyone. And that everyone is the public. So our intent was for them to go home and share it with their friends and their families and their colleagues and their neighbors. We created a campaign that had templates that were turnkey, newsletter articles, posters, social media posts. We had a webinar series that was readily available. We offered 2 different webinars. One was traffic safety, have the conversation. One was winter driving because it was later October going into November. The theme was speed counts. I will share with you real quickly and briefly here just one of the leave behinds that we implemented for this campaign. And here's one of the leave behind posters that was shared with employers. And so what they could do is they could grab onto this and they could send it to their employees. They could post it within their workplace if they were still having people come into their place of employment. And the beauty behind these campaigns is we made them turnkey. Our listserv, our email, a lot of this was done via electronic. Our listserv is about 13,800. We do have a member listserv of 3,800 member organizations that do consist of businesses and associations that reach about 311,000 people statewide. And so from a grassroots campaign like this, these are really essential to change behaviors on the road and to change our traffic safety culture. It also takes time and resources, and this federal infrastructure funding will give us resources to do more campaigns like this on larger scale that are bigger, bolder, and better. And with that, I am open to any questions or would like to turn things over. You can see too on the bottom of this that we had great partners. This is not a solo effort by any shape of the imagination. We work with AAA, we work with the Department of Public Safety, the Towards Zero Deaths campaign.
Thank you so much, Ms. Kanz, for all of your work over many, many years and many capacities on this issue. And what we'll do is we're gonna hear from Ms. Kostreski, and then if there's any questions, we'll take those for all three of you. So I'd like to call on Holly Kostreski, who is the Towards Zero Deaths Program Director for the Northeast Minnesota region. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Kostreski. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. And then we'll have a question from Representative Cagle after Ms. Kostreski.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for having me today. I am Holly Kostreski, the Northeast Minnesota Towards Zero Death Regional Director. I represent the Department of Health, Public Safety, and Transportation, and I am housed by MnDOT District 1 in Duluth. I am one of 9 regional Towards Zero Death directors. I am a public health professional who specializes in injury prevention and traffic safety, and I'm here to deliver the positive news of all the great things that are already occurring in our great state of Minnesota. I'm an expert in interdisciplinary partnership, and I think of my job as working for those who have lost their lives or were seriously injured on Minnesota roads. We link resources and people together on a grassroots level using community-based approaches to reduce deaths and injuries on Minnesota roads. And I have 3 examples I want to share with you today. First, the local St. Louis and Carlson County Towards Zero Death Coalitions developed an online virtual traffic safety program for students while they were remote learning. The second example, in Lincoln High School in Thief River Falls, the Key Club students attended our regional workshop that we have in each region each spring, which you are all invited to. These students came to our regional workshop for 5 years, and then they said, can we please have our own teen TZD summit? And they developed that. And it was great because it was twofold purpose. It provides safe driving education, and it encouraged students to think of careers in traffic safety, such as judicial, engineering, education, public health professionals like myself, enforcement, fire, all the partners that we have. And then finally, currently we're working on, after 2 high profile crashes that we had in Itasca County, one being with our DNR officer and another with an ambulance, Itasca County is planning to host their first Itasca County Traffic Safety Summit, including government, school, hospital, law enforcement, EMS, resorts, bars, restaurants, employers. They will gather together to review Itasca County data and discuss ways to shift the traffic safety culture and opportunities to trend the deaths and crashes downwards. This pilot model could be duplicated across our great state through our regional networks to share resources, ideas, solutions to prevent fatalities from occurring on Minnesota roads. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Ms. Kostreski. This is really, really amazing work, and we appreciate your testimony and you know all you're doing to keep folks safe in your region. So we have time for one member question, and that goes to Vice Chair Cagle. Oh, and we'll take one from Representative Kozak, and then we do have to move on. Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm not sure who can answer this, possibly Mr. Hansen, but I was just kind of curious if there's any data out there. I've been hearing that, you know, people wait until they're 18 to get their driver's test now or to get their driver's license so that they can avoid having to do the classroom work and all that. It's cheaper to just, you know, wait to go get that. And so I was just kind of curious if there's any data about, you know, accidents and people who have not taken the education component of driver's ed.
Director Hansen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cagle, that is a great question. And I don't want to tread too far into the driver and vehicle services part of that, but I can tell you that I've heard the same anecdotal information that some are waiting until they're 18 to avoid that. But what I can tell you from a data perspective is that we are seeing an uptick or an increase in the number of unlicensed driver-involved fatalities. So I think that when we look at that anecdotal evidence that both of us are hearing and we couple that with the data, we can draw some conclusions. And that is something that we could take a look at.
Thank you very much. Our last question for this section comes from the member from Lakeville, Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein. And Representative Cagle, my question was along the similar lines of the correlation between classroom training or online training is becoming more popular and necessary during the COVID breakouts. If you could forward us any of the data that you have on that, that I would be interested in looking at that. Do you know offhand whether there were any detrimental effects of students doing online classes, which I think may be becoming more in demand and accessible to students, all students, to do that? Was there any detrimental effect of using online classes? And I would be interested in hearing a little bit more about the regional workshops, especially the online ones, if you could share some of that information. But
Mr.
Online
Hansen.
Classes, are they a problem?
Mr. Hansen.
Mr. Chair and Representative Kosnick, it would be a little bit early for us to be able to assess that for Minnesota populations. There are a number of other studies that I'm aware of from across the country. I'm going to have to do a little bit of research, sir, but I will see what I can dig up and we'll see that it gets into your hands.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And then Representative Elkins, if you have a very brief question, we can take it.
Yes, in the same thread as well. So I recently went through a AAA driver's course online for senior drivers in order to get a discount on my insurance. But in going through that course, I realized that, we have actually seen a revolution in traffic engineering innovations in the last 10 years. Things like what does a thick white line mean? What does a double wide line white line mean? How should you navigate a roundabout? How should a driver behave in the presence of marked bike lanes? And Minnesota, once you've gone through the training class once, you never have to take it again. And I find myself after having gone through this course wondering if maybe we shouldn't have at least some kind of periodic online training course that current drivers should go through just to get caught up with innovations of, in terms of what they're going to see on our roads when they're driving.
Thank you. I think that was maybe more of a comment. I don't know if anyone on the panel wants to respond, but I appreciate your reminding us, Representative Elkins, that driver education is something for all ages and necessary at all stages of life. So thank you for that. Mr. Hansen, Ms. Kahns, and Ms. Kostreski, thank you again for all of your work and for testifying. And I think we will be in ongoing dialogue and contact with you on the committee. So appreciate your being here and your work. Now we're going to move on to the emergency medical and trauma services piece of traffic safety. And so we have two guests with us. First is Dr. Michael McGonigal. He's the chair of the State Trauma Advisory Council for the Minnesota Department of Health. Welcome to the committee, Dr. McGonigal, and please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Michael McGonigal. I'm a career trauma surgeon. I've been practicing trauma surgery now exclusively for just about 40 years. And almost 30 years ago, I was recruited to St. Paul Ramsey Medical Center back then. And I was actually recruited to build that into what it is today, which is one of the busiest level one adult centers in the country and the first level one pediatric center in the Midwest. But the reason that I'm here today is because I am also the chair of the State Trauma Advisory Council, also known as the STAC. And this is a citizen advisory board for the state trauma system under the Department of Health. And that's why Mr. Ballard is joining me here today. The STAC consists of 14 healthcare professionals, including paramedics, doctors, nurses, as well as a representative from the State Highway Patrol, who is also with us here today. The STAC exists to advise, consult with, make recommendations to the commissioner, for the Department of Health regarding the development, maintenance, and improvement of the statewide trauma system. So probably what many people wonder is, what is the trauma system and what does it have to do with traffic crashes, which is why we're all here today. First and foremost, it's a system that ensures that injured people get to the right hospital with the right capabilities in the right amount of time. And it really has a web of interconnected parts that are designed so if anybody is injured, it helps them return to their home life, normal, their job as quickly as possible. And so this really is an integral piece of the TZD concept. It begins with the timely arrival of EMS providers who then render immediate patient care, provides a framework of rules that they use to determine which hospital they can go to, how quickly they have to get there. And this system includes rural hospitals. And in those centers, it ensures that all the providers have appropriate training. It provides guidance to them on who can stay there, who must be transferred to a higher level of care. And then that would be one of the level one or level two trauma centers, which are the top of the food chain, so to speak. And these are the centers that can provide the care and handle the most extreme injuries and save as many lives as possible. So overall, if you combine all these resources, it becomes a very powerful tool to allow us to reduce a traffic deaths once a crash has occurred. We really, other than our general prevention efforts, don't have much of an impact until after some kind of mishap has occurred. So for the previous 15 years, we've continued to update and improve the trauma system. But as you can imagine, there are some challenges that impact this part of Towards Zero Deaths. First of all, staffing in hospitals across the state is suffering significant turnover, reassignment of their trauma professionals who are in those hospitals to other responsibilities because they have to deal with patients with COVID. Pre-hospital providers face similar issues. They have significant issues of turnover, burnout, and they have something extra, and that is coverage issues that occur when they have to take non-trauma patients to other centers for additional care, because this is particularly a problem if they are what I call the only ambulance. If they're the only ambulance in that community and they have to go to a hospital that's 40 or 50 miles away, they are immediately taken offline for a significant period of time, and then the only possibilities at that point are to look to other nearby communities and potentially take their ambulances offline in order to serve their population. So even though overall it looks like Omicron appears to be easing, these issues will continue to linger across the trauma system for some time. But hopefully I've given you an understanding of kind of how this works, how it fits into the TZD, and I would be happy to yield to answer any questions.
Thank you so much, Dr. McGonigal. And that perspective is so helpful. And, you know, just the idea of, you know, if we can really make our roads safer, that's going to help the entire healthcare system. And I think you, you know, really articulated that well. I know we have Mr. Ballard here, if folks have any questions. I don't see any. I don't know if there's anything you wanted to add, Mr. Ballard. You know, you're here, and we would value any expertise or thoughts you have.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have anything to add. I'm here to support Dr. McGonigal.
Okay.
He did a great
job. Thank you so
much.
Thank you. I don't see any member questions, so I do appreciate this. I think, again, it's sort of a, it's not something we think about a lot, you know, in the context that, you know, we talk a lot about enforcement and education, the other E's, but the emergency management, emergency medical services piece to this is so absolutely critical. And I appreciate both of you being here and your work on this. Thank you so much. So members, we have one last segment here, and I want to preface this by saying, you know, we've heard a lot of about a lot of good work that's been done by state agencies and others. But I want to just end our afternoon together with a case study of how a community can respond to really all of these different traffic safety issues we've brought up in a very holistic and effective way. And some of the veterans on the committee you know, who were here in 2015 may remember a hearing that Representative Hertas organized, and I've invited Representative Hertas because, you know, we sit through a lot, we have a lot of hearings, we get a lot of information over many, many years, and we don't often remember into the past what we've heard. But I remember, and I shared this with Representative Hertas last week, the hearing that he did on Highway 12 and the traffic safety issues, the crashes, if you will, Colonel Langer, you know, and what was going on in that community, and so much concern. And what the Highway 12 folks can tell us is that, you know, there's two reasons I invited them. Number one is that this is a case study of what happens when citizens, local elected officials, law enforcement, others in a community, what they can do when they get together and do problem solving. And I also wanted to get an update from them on their efforts. So we have guests from the Highway 12 Coalition. And I would just call on our colleague, Representative Hertas, just to give some opening comments, and then we'll hear from others from West Hennepin County about how they addressed an epidemic of crashes on Highway 12 several years ago. Representative Hertas, it's good to see you. You are a veteran. I think you've served on the Transportation Committee before, so it's good to have you back. Welcome back to the committee, and state your name for the record.
All right, Representative Jerry Hertas. Thank you, Chair Hornstein, and members of the committee for inviting me to attend this along with some of my colleagues. Chair Hornstein, when I heard Dr. McGonigal talking about trauma and trauma in the hospitals reminded me of my early career in the healthcare industry. And we had notification of a severe trauma incident on the local highways in Edina. Fairview Southdale was receiving critical care patients and arrived unconscious. And I was assigned that patient. And as we were rendering aid, she became conscious, only to open her eyes and call me out by name, not even realizing and seeing from the degree of the trauma that it was a classmate of mine. And so it just reminded me of that. Thank you for talking about the four E's. And I think as we implement these four E's, we could probably add a couple more, which would also render itself to everybody's enjoyment, one E for enjoyment and the other E for everyone. Chair Hornstein, when, as you recall, and for the record, I did not serve past
Transportation Committee. But you're an honorary member then.
I'm an honorary member. Thank you. Anyway, that said, as many of you may recall, Highway 12 became unfortunately known as the Corridor of Death back in 2015 and 16. And through the good work of TZD and the compilation of data and information, we were quickly able to respond by learning more about crash audits and the severity of those types of crashes, and particularly where some of these problems were arriving from. And, you know, one thing that happens, and I'd like to make sure we don't understate the importance of the legislature's intervention sometimes, as is the case that you outlined what happened in 15. But it's easy from an engineering standpoint, it's easy from MnDOT to plan for the improvement and the expansion of our transportation network. What can't be done is to anticipate the changes in the demographics that happen in the region as a result of land use and how communities grow. And this was a situation on Highway 12 where we had rural segments of the highway system that were outside of the Beltway serving basically metro volumes of traffic. And so I think it's just a useful reminder that it is important that given the more linear approach to improving our transportation system, that there are circumstances and there are times that the legislature needs to intervene, it needs to quickly react and appropriate the money to deal with an emergency such as this one that occurred on Highway 12. With that, Mr. Chair, I did invite Gary Krells, who is the chief of the West Hennepin Public Safety Department, and Ms. Tina Langens, who Ms. Langens and her husband Ross I've known for decades, and when this whole issue came about, I was terribly saddened to learn that one of the crashes on Highway 12 involved the loss of their child. With that, Mr. Chair, I will be happy to turn it over to Mr. Crouch, Chief Crouch.
Thank you for the introduction and the context for all of this, Representative Hertas. I appreciate that. And I'm really pleased to see Chief Krells again. I remember him coming last time. Chief Krells, welcome back to the Transportation Committee, and please state your name for the record.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I appreciate the few minutes to speak with you here today. I'm the Director of Public Safety for West Hennepin Public Safety Department. And to put it into perspective, we are a joint powers agreement local police department serving Maple Plain and Independence, just 24 miles west of Minneapolis. I also chair the Highway 12 Safety Coalition, which was formed in 2014. And to help everyone understand, where is the Highway 12 Safety Coalition? It's basically where Wayzata goes from 394 to a two-lane highway all the way to the western border of Wright County, roughly 27 miles. So when the area I serve is about 6 miles through Maple Plain and Independence, but it's a much larger area than most people realize. In the summer, fall of 2014, there were some high-profile fatality crashes in Independence and Orono, and a call of action from our citizens, our elected officials, community leaders demanding we need to stop the deaths on Highway 12. And every day I was asked by parents, by my community members, what are you doing as a chief to stop this? And all of us were fueled by grief, anger, death, emotion, frustration. And quite frankly, it became acceptable to most of us and to the people that were driving on Highway 12. We needed to get together and work together to save lives. Shortly after that original meeting, the Highway 12 Safety Coalition was formed, bringing all the cities, county, state, and state agencies together to save lives and improve safety, all the way from Wayzata to the western border of Wright County. And we quickly learned that we needed to stop blaming each other and start working together and form an alliance as one team, not each individual city or each individual entity. Because in the end, we wanted people to stop dying on Highway 12. And I want you to imagine bringing all of Hennepin County, the engineers, all of Wright County, Metro MnDOT, District 3 MnDOT, District 8 MnDOT, every city, every mayor, every elected official and township into agreement on the changes needed to protect people that are driving on Highway 12. And it was a lot to do. But I can say successfully, we did it for 7 years. We've been meeting every month to discuss what we need to do. I would say it's a success story, and I think it's kind of being projected as that today, but we still have a long ways to go in saving more people along Highway 12. Individually, we couldn't accomplish this goal. We needed to work together, but I can tell you that we were averaging 3 fatalities a year. We lost 30 people and fatality crashes over the past 13 years. And if we make it one more month, we're going to go 3 years without having a single fatality in the Highway 12 Safety Coalition. And how do we do it? Education, working locally with our TZD partners, enforcement. Everybody knows most of the cops out here on the western side are pretty aggressive, and West Hennepin is included in that. And we basically partnered with everybody like, hey, we're going to get out there and work. We're not sitting at the coffee shop drinking coffee. We're going to get out and work. But we also, I think an important part, and I'm glad we had the medical providers here today, is we really spent a lot of time working with North Air Care, our local fire departments, and training, especially with rapid deployment to all crashes on Highway 12, not just personal injury. We just assumed all crashes on that highway are going to have serious trauma to them. So we immediately started our fire departments, and we coordinated the radios. Our radio systems working between police, fire, EMS we were not on the same page, so we did that. And then engineering was really, really important. We went and got, in 2015, we did a safety audit of our area, because everybody had an emotional, what they thought was the problem, but it was good to see that somebody put it into an audit and show us what areas needed improvement. And then I wish I could take credit for it with the 50 being everyone. That was from Director Hansen. And yes, he was on our original Highway 12 Safety Coalition, and he still is an integral part of it today. I saw it was in his slides earlier, and I'm glad he kept it, because none of us can do this alone. And then lastly, when we're talking with the legislature, and funding becomes a big issue in planning. And a lot of times the funding's not there. And I just want to say, in 7 years, we've been able to make engineering funding improvements in the following areas. 2014, we installed centerline and fog line rumble strips. That was actually donated by a local company out of Rogers who did it for free. The safety audit in 15, 2016, LED intersections, lighting installed at uncontrolled intersections. 2015, left-hand turn lanes at 92, that was about $1 million. 2016, concrete median dividers installed from Wayzata to County Road 6, that was about $3.5 million. And when I bring these up, these weren't budgeted items. These were items that we were able to successfully work in through the safety audit and get done. 2019, we removed a lot of obstructions in the right-of-way. In 2019, we had an early a message board, early warning system for slippery roads and sensors all along Highway 12. Centerline delineators installed from 90 to County Road 90 to Delano. And then recently, we've finished the concrete center median divider from County Road 6 to Baker Park Road in Maple Plain. And we also installed a roundabout at County Road 90. And then next year, this spring, we started construction on completely redoing Highway 12 and County Road 92. So, and also we have an additional $2 million that was set aside to develop the next concept plan, design plan, from Maple Plain to Delano. What does the highway look like? And I bring it up not to be judgmental, but this is the original highway from the 1940s. This is the only 4.5 mile section of the Highway 12 in the entire state that hasn't been redone. And we're darn close to getting a design put together, and we'll be seeking funding for that.
Thank you so much. Yes, very, very helpful for you to walk through the whole process and how the community came together. And you really have a proven record here of saving lives. We have one final testifier, members. I don't think we're going to have time, unfortunately, for questions for this section, but we all know Representative Hertas, and we can, if you have questions, you can certainly direct them to him. Tina Langhans, thank you so much for coming. It's really helpful and important for us to have a community perspective, a personal perspective on this issue. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Tina Langhans, and my daughter Chelsea was killed on Highway 12 August 22nd of 2015. A driver crossed the center line and hit her head on. They actually both did die. She's not the first to die on the highway. She wasn't the last, and hopefully there's not more to come. A classmate of hers died shortly after she did, near the same location. I got involved with Highway 12 Safety Coalition shortly after her death, and funding was found for a barrier wall from Wayzata to Long Lake. And with the recent improvements to Highway 12, it's now been extended through Maple Plain. The barrier wall was a goal of mine to help ensure no other families had to endure what my family did. It's not okay to lose family members on highways where, if safety is upgraded, it doesn't have to happen. Highway 12 still has safety issues. Further safety improvements, teamwork, and funding are critical to make this road safer for all drivers. Thanks for having me today.
Thank you so much for sharing your story. We're so sorry for your loss, and we're inspired by your example of work on this issue. And I think the improvements and funding, planning issues that you talked about are a really important reminder of the work that's ahead of us in this committee, not only this remainder of this session, but well into the future. So thank you for sharing your story and for your inspiration. Members, we are at time, but again, Ms. Langhans, I think that you've really given us a charge. I know that several of our guests have talked about the opportunity we have with the federal money coming in and the fact that there is some safety criteria as part of that funding. And so we are going to do our best as a committee to access every penny of that so it could get poured into the kinds of projects that we've talked about today to enhance safety. And there's an education piece also that deserves funding. So members, we're right here at 2:30. I'm sorry that we just don't have time for questions, but I do want to thank all of our testifiers and participants today for a really enlightening hour and a half. We do have a lot of work ahead of us, but you've given us some important direction, and we hope to remain in contact with you as this 2022 legislative session progresses. With that, members, we will stand adjourned until next Tuesday, February 15th. Thursday, February 10th. We are adjourned until Thursday, February 10th, and we'll be continuing our safety discussion with a focus on pedestrian safety. So we'll see you on Thursday at 1 o'clock. With that, we are adjourned.